Hello, and welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am your science officer for this episode, Matty Lubchansky.
And that makes me the captain, Clayton Ashley. Mm-hmm.
And we are not back from a long hiatus because we never had one.
Nope.
If you thought we didn't record for a month due to holidays and traveling and work stuff and whatever, you are actually, you've been a victim of a sort of temporal trick by the Suliban.
Time dilation. Something was going on there.
Time dilation. The one crewman whose name I forget already has been fucking with you. The dead one,
Daniels. We were just in the wiggly timey-wimey room. It was only for us. It was only like an hour. But to y'all time passed.
Me and Clayton were hanging out. We were wiggling around without you in a sort of timeless void. And if we timed our reentry incorrectly, I'm very sorry. Yeah. But we are back. It is a new year. We're in the middle of season two.
Yeah.
Because it is this week, it is episode 7 of season 2, the 7th.
Can you imagine if it wasn't the 7th episode?
I know. They had to, right? And the week of November 6, 2002. So let's start with the news, as it were.
Sorry, I'm already lost. Where in time are we again?
We are November 6, 2002.
Oh.
The week of November 6th. Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you. I'm back
okay,
there now.
You look worried about it. Okay, you're casting your mind to getting ready for my 17th birthday party. Mm. Okay. On November 2nd this week is one of the accursed things that I found was something called the Godless Americans March on Washington.
Whoa.
Which I don't remember, but it was an estimated 2,000 atheists, agnostics, humanists, and freethinkers.
That's an interesting choice mm-hmm. as a group of agnostics, atheists, and unbelievers.
Yeah, I'm not religious. I'm an atheist. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. It's not that I wouldn't perhaps put myself in that category. But yeah, this kind of activism, I guess I thought it started big. It got really big around the 06 to 08 Reddit time. Or not even Reddit. That was like, what was it? Dig? What was going on in the internet?
Like the Hitchens of it all.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
The sort of like, and that sort of free thinkers movement shit curdled so bad and so hard because mostly it was just an excuse for these people to be like raging Islamophobes in the press.
Yeah.
Not like they needed an excuse at the time, but it was one avenue. If you wanted to be a raging Islamophobe in the press, it was one of the avenues available to you was free thinking, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the kind of shit where people march on Washington and they're holding signs that say, like, atheism is myth understood. Anyways, I was looking at the names of the speakers at this event and, like, nobody rang a bell to me, which is crazy.
Wow, okay.
But there was apparently the founder of something called the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers, which sounds crazy to me. But then it was like, it's everyone in the military. I thought for a moment it was a paramilitary, paramilitary group, but I got really... really excited. They're charging over the bunker into battle with the colanders on their head. Think about how beautiful it is. Anyways, November 2nd. November 4th, the U.S. military forces, they claim they have struck and killed a car containing the Al-Qaeda masterminds behind the 2000 attack on the USS Cole, which is a battleship. They just demolished a car full of people with a Hellfire missile. Don't worry about it. Just a troubling beginning to a troubling trend.
Now wait,
that continues to this day.
Mm-hmm. That this happened. The coal happened now. That was
the coal happened in 2000, which is before.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
The show Star Trek Enterprise. We've not covered the USS Cole attack, but that was an Al Qaeda attack pre 9/11, and I guess they found the guy who was the mastermind of it in Yemen, and they blew up his car.
Mm.
I wonder who else was in there. I don't know. I don't care. Not my problem. Hey, what's important is that we don't think about it.
That's how this whole thing works.
That's how this whole thing works. But this is, an early instance of a sort of thing we're going to keep doing forever. Speaking of, also on November 4th, Amnesty International releases a report accusing the IDF of war crimes and human rights violations. But everybody on Earth is, I guess, too busy to worry about it, I guess.
I'm sure none of this complete abdication of international law will come back to bite us.
No, I'm just gonna. I've actually got this really big, heavy boomerang that I've crafted out of a Hellfire missile's like casing, and I'm going to just hurl it as hard as I can at somebody else. Mm. And I'm going to look at my watch.
That seems like a good plan. I can't.
Not yeah. expecting it to come back to me because it's a boomerang, and those don't come back to you at all. A sort of imperial boomerang. It's a term that I've invented.
Yeah.
No problems here.
There's no way that giant weapon will be used on the core, the interior.
No, why would that? No. Okay, here's the thing. Is my hen roost is empty, and they've all gone. And I've sent them away. I've strapped
your hens, you say.
Mm-hmm. I've given my hens military plate carriers and AR-15s, and uh-huh. I've dropped them over Yemen. But this leaves my roost empty, and I can't imagine any of them returning.
No, that would typically that's not what hens do, especially when armed. they never come back.
They'll never. My chickens, not my hens. Mm. Whatever. Anyways, November 5th of 2002 was the midterm elections. The GOP has retained the House and narrowly takes the Senate, which really unleashes the Bushies to do the early 2000 things that we are familiar with them doing.
Atypical first presidential midterm. I remember that being a big deal.
Yes, it was a big deal that they did that. I mean, this is also, you know, only 10 years after the GOP has taken the House back for the first time in like 50 years.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It was a really long time that the House was Democrat.
And I remember there, like, kind of like the topper on it of how this political climate was that I think there was a Democratic senator in Georgia who was like I think he was a veteran, had lost limbs in the war, and okay. and they turned him into a anti-war raging liberal, and he lost in this election.
That's cool. I love that actually. The other little side quest of the midterms that I thought was kind of funny was that the this is a thing I like vaguely remember, which was the SEC commissioner Harvey Pitt, who was embattled basically since day one. He was a Bush guy. He resigns like the minute the victories are secured for the GOP. He was very embattled due to his scandalously close ties to Wall Street.
Oh,
and I was just like, remember scandals?
yeah.
Remember when we'd have scandals Someone and people would be like, I have to resign for my scandal.
Because of their close ties.
Yeah. And this is like, again, like, this is just, I guess this is the premise of our show here, but just like watching like everybody sowing the seeds of the next 20 years of American decline. Like, here's this SEC chair that's like way too close to Wall Street and he has to resign. But the next one also has the same problem. And we're just going to not worry about the complete regulatory capture of Wall Street. I bet in 6 years it won't demolish the world economy. I bet.
You're right.
These chickens will stay far away. No, I was making a joke about the other chickens, about the war chickens.
Yeah.
But these are my banking chickens. And yeah. I've...
sort out those banking chickens.
I did a good job talking to those chickens. I said, do not come home. And I've sent them to Harvard Business School.
And you know what? Al Gore was defeated, so the environmental chickens are also... far, far away.
Many of my chickens have been sent away to be fostered at a rival lord's home.
But this is such an era of like, it is both, like you said, they're sowing the seeds of our current hellscape, but also they're strangely having to obey some of the like the way politics worked in the decades before.
Yeah, like the norms are still around in a way that they're not now.
Yeah, in surprising ways, because I feel like I think there's also like in our time here covering Star Trek, a like GOP Speaker of the House is going to resign for having maybe said something racist.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
And now they're just like straight up like Senator Goebbels too has once again praised his father Goebbels. Yeah, I crazy. Two episodes ago, we talked about the signing of the Authorization of the Use of Military Force Act, like the big bad of the early 2000s, which was not good. But 2 days after this episode, on Friday, November 8th, that's my birthday, the UN Security Council unanimously approved Resolution 1441, which, of course, forces one Saddam Hussein to disarm or, and I'm quoting here, face serious consequences.
Is this connected to, they're done with inspecting, right? We're just at the
The inspections are over. Now the Security Council, which is like the US and friends, just saying, hey, Saddam, you have to disarm right now or we'll do something. What? Who knows and who cares? We'll never find out, I guess. So that's the news, which is bad. I want to move on to music. Let's talk about music. Let's get a little fun with it. So yeah, my new MO is to just go through what's new. Mm-hmm. So new this week at number 93, Busta Rhymes with Spliff and Spliff Star rather, and Sean Paul's Make It Clap. And it's the one that's very like reggaeton-y Busta Rhymes song, which it's got Sean Paul on it. And I was listening to it again. I don't remember it at all, but it rips. It's good.
What is the it that is there? He's trying to clap.
And if you listen to the song, it appears to be hands.
Oh, okay. That's surprising, honestly.
Which is astonishing to me. Yeah. I mean, he's probably talking about your butt.
Yeah. But
in the song, cheekily, pun intended, you hear hand claps.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
At number 92, new is a song called Ignition by a regular guy named R. Kelly. You know, it's the sort of thing where the song Ignition is actually kind of unmemorable.
Uh-huh.
What we all remember is the remix to Ignition.
Oh, yeah.
We remember Ignition remix.
Yeah, yeah.
Ignition, the song, is kind of nothing. At number 90, Snoop Dogg. And here's a song title I don't want to say out loud, but I have to for the show. It's called From the T-H-A, Church to the Palace. From the Church to the Palace. I don't want to say it like that, but that is how it's spelled.
Yeah.
There's like four U's in it. In the word church. And that's it's a late Snoop. I listened to it for this. It is a Neptunes Snoop. I think Pharrell is on the track. And it has a fine enough beat because it's early Neptunes, but it is old Snoop and it is kind of, he's a little washed. I'll say this is the beginning of the end for Mr. Dogg as a rapper, I think.
Yeah. Starting to transition into his career as a general
as a guy,
entertainer and guest star in reality shows, as
television host. Yeah. At 86, Tony Braxton featuring Loons hit the freeway, a song that did not ring a bell to me until I listened to it. And I got hit with a sense memory of being in high school, severely hard, listening to Hot 97. This is also a Neptunes produced track and it is pretty exquisite. I think it's a really good one. And now we move on to the country slop portion of our program. No. At 79 and 75, respectively, Terry Clark's I Just Want to Be Mad and Rebecca Lynn Harwood's Forgive. Songs I've never heard in my life. Do not ring a bell.
They kind of pair, unfortunately.
They kind of do. Terry Clark's I Just Want to Be Mad is like, literally, she sings the lyric, we've been married for 7 years. So it's about being married to someone for a long time and wanting to go to bed angry. Or like go like take a walk to like let off some steam. And I'm like, all right.
I don't know if I can say this, but are the straights okay?
You're not allowed to say that. And the answer is no. My favorite, I was watching the music video for Rebecca Lynn Harwood's Forgive, which is a song she wrote for Faith Hill and then ended up keeping herself. So it's a very Faith Hill-ass kind
of
song.
Of course.
But I just like, not a lot of YouTube comments under this one, but I found one that just was really, to me, just made me very wistful. Just from Dallas White, 512, 6 years ago, says, I like this song. No one else? Question mark? At number 70, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, The Zephyr Song, which was like, you know, like the fourth single off, By the Way.
Okay.
It's a song that I have great fondness for because I really liked that record when I was 16 and 17 years old because I was a child. Now with some space, I can recognize that it's not very good.
Okay. Not worth returning to.
And at 69, Nelly's Air Force Ones.
Oh, nice.
A song we all remember. Of course, very popular shoe to this day. However, listening to the song actually was making me so mad because it is just a bunch of, it's Nelly and all his friends on the track, just like listing the colorways of Air Force Ones they like to buy.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, right. American culture is fucking cursed in this time. Like it is deceiving to be like, because most of the time we're going through these Hot 100 songs. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, oh, like the R&B hip hop songs are in general pretty good. and the non R&B hip hop stuff, the rock music, the pop music, the country music is kind of like cursed awful. But this is a, to me, kind of an evil object. Because yeah, it's just these guys being like, I love the way I like to buy. I love to buy my shoes. I love my shoes, and I love to pay the Nike Corporation money for my shoes. This is a free advertisement for Nike. And have you considered getting the colorway with the gum colored bottoms? And it's like, I don't.
There's also kiwi, I guess, is a type of green, a lime green that.
Yeah, guy's rapping about the kind of green he likes.
But you can't get that color if you had a personal genie.
Yeah. But that does rhyme, I guess.
It does.
Not the best song. At the very top of the charts, Lose Yourself by Eminem cannot be stopped. That is six weeks at number one. And the movie 8 Mile is not even out yet.
Building.
Movies this week, kind of paltry pickings at the movies. At number 25 is the notorious Brian De Palma flop, Femme Fatale, with Rebecca Romijn and Antonio Banderas. Which has been critically reacclaimed. This is a contender for a watcher, because it was a flop at the time, cult classic now. It's got music by, Ryuichi Sakamoto, the Yellow Magic Orchestra guy.
Oh, shit.
And it's Rebecca Romijn, Antonio Banderas, and Brian De Palma. But it did really, really horrible. Really, really bad.
Never heard of it somehow. Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Femme Fatale. Look at the poster. It's pretty cool. Take a look-see. Look at the poster.
I just Googled Femme Fatale, and I need to be more specific. Yeah,
Femme Fatale 2002 is what you want to look up.
There we go. Oh.
Look at that poster.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you want to see that? Rebecca's like, It's like Rebecca's like in a lace shirt and like a skirt that looks like flappery material, but if you look at it from far enough away, she's kind of like, it looks like it's made of guns. Mm-hmm. And she's in front of a spinny plate. I don't know. And then Banderas.
His face. Behind her. Huge.
Beautiful, beautiful eyes on that man. She's wearing like some sort of bralette thing. I think she's in that outfit a lot in the movie.
She's a jewel thief.
Yeah, she's a jewel thief.
Oh, this sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds incredible. I want to give it a watch. I think put on the list.
Put it on the list.
Speaking of our list, at number 12, Star Wars Episode 2 in IMAX.
So it's like, what the hell?
It's crazy. It's at number 12, despite being on less than 60 screens, which is like kind of amazing, but speaks to.
And for that one of all Star Wars.
For that one, be like, I got to go back and watch Star Wars Episode 2 again, bigger.
Maybe it'll be.
I got to really see the rasterizing lines of them putting in every character that isn't Ewan McGregor into this movie. I got to see the Greek diner guy. I got to see Dexter Jetster, 45 feet tall.
Yes.
I have to be overwhelmed by the eyeballs of Kit Fisto. I need it medically. Clayton, will you take me to IMAX Star Wars Episode 2?
I think we missed our chance, Maddie. Sorry.
Fuck. Well, I guess I'll kill myself. At number 4, the Eddie Murphy, Owen Wilson buddy cop comedy, I Spy, a movie that does not exist.
I was going to say, haven't they made a different buddy cop movie?
Yeah,
or those two characters and other have done other. I don't know.
Both of those guys have been in many other buddy cop movies.
Yeah.
Like Owen Wilson's in the Shanghai Nights.
Right. That's okay.
And Eddie Murphy, of course, Axel F himself, from Beverly Hills Cop, but also a lot of buddy cop. I think they're both in other buddy cop movies. But it's called I Spy. It's based off an old TV show from the 60s.
Of course.
And I'm just like, I don't remember this thing at all. Mm-hmm. It looks completely made up. It looks like lost to time. Kind of like possibly lost media. I don't know.
But it's number 4 in November 2002.
And at number 1, of course. Of course. The Santa Claus 2, new this week.
November.
$35 million its opening weekend.
I don't think I would have guessed that in a million years. November is when they're starting the Christmas movies.
It used to be the weekend after. Oh, yeah. That's really, really early that November. I'm sorry. It feels early.
Yeah.
But maybe they're like, well, it'll run for 16 weeks.
I mean, it's also got that Tim Allen.
It's got that Tim Allen juice.
It's got that
Krumholz sauce.
I think I might have seen Santa Claus 1, but you know what? Thinking of Tim Allen, I just have to hype a former colleague of mine, John Boyce, did a 4-part series about the laying of the very first Atlantic Telegraph cable.
Ooh.
That is also through the prism of the sitcom Home Improvement.
Okay.
About how every invention has a Tim and an Al, like an asshole, mm-hmm. good at talking guy, and the actual brains of the operation behind. And it is an incredible documentary series because it is both a really deep dive into Home Improvement and also the laying of the Atlantic cable that I found fascinating. I don't have much that's to say amazing. About Santa no, Claus 2.
Sure. That sounds great. I mean, I've been enjoying the John Boy's family of products since I was literally in college. Mm-hmm. And we are, I think, the same age. So, anyways.
Go watch that instead of Santa Claus 2.
I was reading The Dugout when I was like 20. Anyways, great. That sounds great. I want to check that out. I bet it's better than the Santa Claus 2 movie that sucks and is bad. It's not even as good as Santa Claus 1.
No.
And finally, rounding out my duties as science officer, we talk about the television. So we, of course, beaten once again the vile Dawson, who has hubristically titled his episode "Ego Tripping at the Gates of Hell." after the Flaming Lips song from Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots.
Wow.
Yeah, we of course here at Star Trek Enterprise are losing to My Wife and Kids, The Bernie Mac Show, and Ed as always.
Yeah.
However, we are getting absolutely our lunch fucking hoovered away from us into space by the 36th annual Country Music Association Awards on CBS.
Oh, fun.
This is like, yeehaw. I think, country has gone mainstream because of all of our patriotism and our patriotism feelings,
mm-hmm.
right?
And our
Walmart country is like sweeping the nation. It is what, you know, it's actually a funny thing. I feel kind of parallel to now where there was, I mean, it's, I think, fading a lot quicker because the news moves quicker. And also it was way more AstroTurf this time around. And I think people could smell it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there's that thing. Like last year where there's like, okay, well, Americans love to be Nazis and that's culture now. And you're going to have to like suck it up and like become right wing and all the media is right wing and whatever. And everyone was kind of like, oh, we are. And I feel like a very similar thing happened in 2002 where they're just like, well, we're at war. We're at war forever. And you, my friend, got to wear a cowboy hat.
And
you
yeah,
have to.
The good old boys are back in the White House, but not. Different kind of good old boys.
Yeah, good. These boys are even gooder.
They got trucks. They like their trucks.
Yeah.
And their Bud Light. At this time, Bud Light was okay.
This was when Bud Light was good. It was a good drink to drink when you were clearing brush on your ranch.
While listening to the Country Music Awards.
While you watch the Country Music Awards on a little television with your friend Lawrence Kansas. Do you think Lawrence... for new listeners, I don't know why you pop in right now, but for new listeners, Lawrence Kansas is, of course, the avatar of the American man watching this show on television in his truck in the parking lot of a Circuit City, I believe.
Yes, which still existed. And I feel like I thought about this maybe because this is not her first Country Music Awards, but I think his wife probably watched them.
Oh, she's like, I got to see what was her name? I got to see what Terry Clark is up to. I got to see her performance of Wanna Be Mad live at the CMAs, which I don't know if she was. And so I've also been finding, interestingly, television debuts the week of our show here. I found two interesting ones. The very bad MTV animated series 3 South, which only ran for like 11 episodes, but it's got like Brian Posehn on it. It was a Family Guy writer. It, like during the Family Guy hiatus after they'd been canceled the first or second time here. And it's like, I remember it because I was like obsessed with like watching late night animated adult animation stuff when I was this age and not like now at all. And, and it had the worst character designs and animation I've ever seen. What? The show is really,
say it again,
really, really bad. It's about like the showrunner's experiences at Miami of Ohio University, I think, or a Miami University. Maybe it was just University of Miami. One of those two. Anyways, the theme song is also a Flaming Lips song off Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots. So I think it's also safe to say at this moment in time, America was experiencing Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots fever.
Yes, I think that is accurate. Sorry.
The other.
What was the show called again? I want to see it.
3 South. The number 3.
South.
Because the direction South.
I guess my face didn't make a sound when I was making a perplexed face, but I was making a perplexed face.
A perplexed face.
Yes, that whole time. And now
a perplexed face. Yes,
never heard, seen, what in the...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think there was a moment after the premiere of South Park where they're just like, animation can be bad. Here it is. Here's a piece of shit that sucks.
I'm even like trying to think of a comparison to like give people a mental picture of it.
It looks like what if you hit Brad Neely in the head with a hammer?
Okay.
You know, Brad Neely cartoons like look kind of shitty, but then you look at them for a long time and you're actually like, oh, these are actually like compellingly drawn and like fun and interesting to look at and whatever. Like there's care. This is like the opposite of that.
Yes.
This is like someone like doing a poor imitation.
They also have before very Brad Neely large noses, everyone.
Yeah. This is like you gave Don Hertzfeldt the dropper tool in Photoshop and just like let him color in there.
Yeah.
And also it wasn't good at animation or writing. Anyways, the good MTV show also premiered this week, though. A little show called Clone High.
Okay.
Beautiful Clone High, which, you know, only ran for one season. And the season recently that I half watched. Great show. Lord and Miller, etc. Got canned.
Clone High is the show that I it's like a marker that anybody who brings it up who have likened it is a cool person. I haven't seen it, unfortunately, so I may not be.
It's no, the original run is the original show is very good and it got canceled. If I recall, one of the big reasons was a lot of complaints from the Indian government about the show because of its depiction of Mahatma Gandhi.
Yes.
Which is, to me, funny. The joke is that he's not very Gandhi-like at all. And also the Gandhi himself, complicated figure. Oh, yeah, it's out on the show. One more accursed sort of like, oh, this is the future of all television. Also this week premiering.
Oh, dear.
ESPN's Around the Horn.
Not what I expected, but yes.
You ever watch Around the Horn, Clayton?
Well, I'm not a big sports person, but I know the show.
It used to be on right at the time. I can't remember. I think it was the afternoon, but it was on during a time where I would always be like at my kitchen table and it would just be on the TV in our kitchen. Because we had a little tiny TV in our kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I would just watch it, even though I didn't really know what it was about. And it was just sort of, it is perfectly parodied on 30 Rock as a show called Sports Shouting.
Yes.
It's literally just like people with buzzers yelling at each other. It's like, there's like a guy scoring it. It's like, whose line is it anyway, but for having a take? And it is the sort of birth of the take as a thing.
Mm.
People forget when you talk about takes, it originated as a sports thing. People would talk about hot sports takes, and it was a real, like from talk radio and ESPN, the idea of like having a take was a thing for sports pundits to have. And then it became a thing that everybody has to have about everything all the time. And this is the birth, in my opinion, in my mind, the birth of the take.
Wow.
Is, what's his name? Tony Reale. And
it says Max Kellerman was the first host.
Max Kellerman was the first host. He, yeah, and he was for a while an ESPN radio guy.
Because it's, yeah, it's all this melting pot of the radio, the television, cable. We got to fill time a little bit. And like arguing is a great way to fill time.
Right. And like, let's for that, let's put Skip Bayless here. Yes. He's going to fucking scream at
the keys,
you.
And him the keystone.
And, him and Stephen A. Smith are going to like,
the two keystones, sorry.
rattle the fucking, the inner bones of your ear until you die.
And I have to feel like this was, you know, on one end, or not even one end, but we had Fox News, CNN, kind of like turning this, mixing this melting pot, but this metaphor is then lost. These were all different things that were twisting this, and the sports part of it, the sports talk show part of it was huge to, I think, pushing, because it's, you could say it's right wing. It's not like it's Republican politics, but I think on a like a broader level, it was a like.
No, and sports commentators do tend conservative often, especially in this period. You know, like I was a big reader a couple years, this is like a couple years later, but like a huge reader of the blog Fire Joe Morgan, which is about baseball. But it was sort of like one of their big bugaboos was like, if a baseball player was white and sucked, every sports commentator loved him. And it was just like, there was like this like horrible deep baked racism into sports media that is still persistent, if not worse now. But it's always been around. Sports commentating is awfully conservative and has been for a long time.
And now let's give them a place to talk about their ideas.
Yes. Like let's give them more time to fill their ideas. And also like a sort of rewarding of coming as far out of left field as possible with your shit.
Yeah.
Like a real, like it's literally a guy with a buzzer and four people trying to get time talking. And so like the more outlandish, harder to defend, bombastic, offensive your fucking take.
The attention economy.
The more air you can get.
Yeah.
and it's sort of like, oh, like Hannity and Combs is too sophisticated for me. I'm going to do this instead. So again, more sowing. I hope nobody ever reaps these seeds, because it would be really disastrous for the economy of attention and the world.
So I know we just, Maddie, I know we just stepped out of our hyperbaric wiggly room, but I'm finding out that
so
maybe
untoward.
Some of these chickens have roosted.
Oh, fuck my chickens. What do you hear this? Do you hear it, Clayton? The distant buck, 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 buck. On the horizon, a pale rooster appears.
God.
Riding on the back of another pale rooster. Anyways, so we got a little long with culture, so I'm going to step away from the science officer's desk or console or whatever mm-hmm. the fuck mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be standing. I'm standing at it. I'm saying, computer, take me to the captain.
And that's me. Get to the show. As we mentioned, is the 7th, the week of November the 3rd. It aired the 3rd? 2nd? Aired the
6th.
6th. 6th. 6th. Is post-election. Six. So,
yes.
This episode is, to my mind, mm-hmm. nothing special.
It's really too bad. It had all the pieces of like a good Deep Space Nine episode.
I was going to say this.
Except for the ending, which we won't talk about.
I've made like a whole documentary that is tangential to the like Cold War spy kind of like post-spy stuff. And you could hook me with that. And there was like tantalizing breadcrumbs that they were going to do something yeah. like that here. And it's yeah. they're just not good enough. I think, unfortunately,
no,
they just don't
like
have the juice.
The idea of like, a war is now over. What do you do with the people who fought in it
mm-hmm.
is interesting. Like, what do you do when your government tells you to do something you don't believe is correct? What do you do?
Especially
when you find yourself empathizing with someone you thought was your enemy.
Yeah.
Like, interesting stuff that I think is tackled really well on Deep Space Nine and to a lesser extent Voyager, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know we can do it in the universe. However,
not on Enterprise, apparently.
Not on Star Trek Enterprise, which loves to take an interesting idea and then do nothing or the opposite of something good with it.
Okay, so to start, basically, T'Pol has a mission.
T'Pol is her name. T'Pol, and that's how you pronounce it. T'Pol.
She gets a mission, and she's very evasive about it.
The worst cold open I've ever seen.
I know, and she's telling Archer about it, like, you're going to get a call. And all I could think about in this scene was that Archer had some really good-looking French toast. And I was kind of hungry.
Yeah. Chef made it.
Good job, chef. That looks like some delicious French toast. So they're going to Pernia Prime, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a snowy planet with a bar.
It's a moon.
It's a moon. Yeah,
It's a moon. It's the moon of Pernia Prime, and it's snowy.
And we're getting some backstory for the setup of this episode, which is that T'Pol was trained as a secret agent, basically. She like worked for the secret service of the Vulcans. Specifically in extraction. She was all about getting someone and bringing them in.
Yeah, she was in the fucking CIA.
Yeah, which kind of makes a lot of sense, especially for both. I mean, it puts it, you know, who are our heroes in 2002? It's the CIA, of course.
That's right, baby. I love them. I love everything they do.
And so that's her backstory. It also explains why she's so good at like martial arts, because it's been a little bit interesting that our science officer is so good at punching.
Well, yeah, I mean, I took that to be like, for a while, you're like, well, all Vulcans are good at martial arts because they all have to learn it or whatever.
Isn't there like something in the lore that they're also like three times as strong as a human or something?
They're stronger than people. They have better, like they are the basic, the beat, the sort of like file on Vulcans is that they are people, but better in every way.
Except they don't have emotions.
Except for their emotions.
Yeah, that's the hidden.
Which they absolutely cannot fucking handle having them. Not like us.
So... Agaron. They weren't always allies, but as Archer points out, aren't you allies? Well, they weren't always. And they used to be very, very corrupt, you know, just, you know, according to the Vulcans, they're very corrupt. And the thing is, now that they've like positioned the Vulcans as like the CIA, the United States in some ways, I don't necessarily want to be like, I don't know if you're telling the truth about Agaron. I don't think they have. I don't think they have chemical weapons, the Vulcans. I don't know.
Yeah.
So they sent in surgically altered Vulcans undercover to infiltrate their
normal,
their like criminal organizations.
Yes.
Because they're so corrupt, that's how they can get in there. It's easy. And then after this, you know, the war succeeded, I guess, and they turned them good. They're all good now, and now they're allies.
They're all good now, and we'll never hear about them ever again in any Star Trek property. Yeah.
T'Pol, her mission was to go and get the, they sent like 100 of these guys surgically altered.
And she was assigned to get six
of them. Six of them didn't return for some reason.
Six of them, they went to ground.
Yeah, you know, double agents, sometimes they get too familiar. They get too double.
They get a little, the technical term in Spycraft is
cubed.
they get a little too doubled.
They've become cubed.
They become incubed by the enemy.
So this is a loose end, and the Vulcans, you know, they don't like loose ends. So
they hate him.
She's like, that's like kind of the extent she explains at this point.
And Archer is like, why are they sending you? And they're like, it's for the Vulcans. They finally located this guy.
Yeah.
One of them. And for the Vulcans, it is a matter of honor.
We got all of them, but this guy, and I, you know, they're sending me because I did it. I'm the only one who can do it, I guess.
I got really close. I was like 20 meters away from
him. Yeah. And Archer, and she's like, Archer, I need someone I can trust. Mm-hmm. Because this episode is going to hit you over the head that it's about trust. That is the episode's theme. Yeah. Subtext is for cowards. So her target is Minos. I guess he's still surgically looks like these Agaron.
He still looks like one of the guys. Yeah, he is. It is. I was driving myself fully insane figuring out who the actor was. And it's the senator who gets all goopy and melts from X-Men.
Oh my God. Yes. Okay. Yeah, he kind of has a bit of his energy, weirdly.
Yeah, a little bit. Senator, I think his name is Senator Kelly in the movies or something.
Senator Wimpy. The guy gets,
Senator Wimpy gets turned into water, and he goes all like, whoa, and he goes, bleh.
What a bad power they gave him. If they gave him like a good power, I feel like he would have been on their side more.
Well, I think the whole point is that they gave him a bad power because the machine didn't work very well.
I forgot.
That movie is great. It was directed by a really cool guy, Brian Singer, cool, famously cool man. Well, was very cool.
We're gonna get to some X-Men movies.
I hope nothing ever comes out about him.
No.
No.
Okay, so again, Vulcan CIA says Minos was a bad guy, arms dealer, amassed a bunch of wealth. He was corrupt, transgenic weapons. Okay, this is all bad news, and they got so close to him on Ryza. But this is our chance. We found him in a dingy cold bar on this winter planet. They're all in tactical winter gear because, again, it's a cold planet, and they capture him. I mean, it's not like it didn't seem that hard, honestly. Like, they get him.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we get our B plot, which is that because Archer has to go on this mission, Tucker gets to be captain for a day.
This is my favorite part of the episode, is every Tucker thing.
It's this is almost like TNG level B plot.
It is really like truly like we've put a child in front of the,
like, Wesley Crusher gets like is trying to fix the garbage compactor and hijinks ensue. Like, it's just it's low stakes, it's kind of goofy, and so here he's like, I'm gonna have lunch in the captain's quarters.
Yeah, I'm going to have lunch in the captain's quarters. I'm going to make him make stuff that I like.
And he wants to kind of impress his buddies on the crew. So they're there enjoying, like, what is it? Phlox is getting his alien food. And our British guy is getting bangers and mash. And he's getting his catfish.
And he fucking loves catfish. He loves his catfish. The thing about Tucker is that he is, I think, a cartoon dog.
A little bit. He's a golden retriever.
Like, Tucker, what are you doing? I'm just trying to find my catfish. Like, okay, man, stop. All you want, there's that one episode where they end up on the automated space station a couple episodes ago.
He's tested.
And he's like, I gotta get this catfish is great. It's like, Scooby-Doo, I need you to come hang out for once. I need you. Aren't you a genius at fixing warp engines?
Yeah, that or pecan pie.
floating around following his nose.
And he's like just about to take a bite when he gets a call from the Vulcans, who are that, like, okay, T'Pol wasn't supposed to take Archer in this mission. It was supposed to entirely be her and a pilot.
Her and Travis were going to go because he was going to pilot the shuttle pod.
And that was it. And so I guess also we didn't mention it. Travis is on this mission, which is great. He actually has a bigger part than he usually does.
I will say for this episode, it has more to do for T'Pol and for Travis than almost every other episode we watched.
Yes. It's not particularly like notable things, but he is there on screen.
He's there hanging out.
He's with the main two.
Yeah.
But so back. Yeah. He gets a call. He's just about to take a bite of his catfish, and the captain, who he is supposed to like just deal with and don't say that Archer went on the mission. But also, Archer's not going to be there, obviously. So
obviously
he basically is just like, just tell him I'll be a minute.
Do we just want to run through and resolve the Tucker B plot, because it doesn't really impact the episode?
No, it doesn't. You're right. So yeah, because he's
because it is to me so funny what happens.
So he says the captain is not available. Just give us a minute. He doesn't say like the captain's not here. And then Phlox points out like you're going to have to keep this up for like 2 days. And so then the next scene where they're like continuing this storyline, he is pretending to be.
Well, they're like, has this guy ever been to Earth? Has he ever talked to Archer? And they're like, no, he's not.
Right. So he's like, I guess I can get away with this.
The Vulcan's like, hey, Archer, you're looking pretty young. He's like, clean living.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that's basically, that was it, right? It was just the one other scene.
It was that. And then the Vulcan says, I have to pass on to you a message from Admiral Forrest of Starfleet to you. Did you know that Cal beat Stanford, or Stanford beat Cal 7-3 or 13-7 or whatever it was?
Yeah.
And he's like, he had to like, and it's very funny to hear the Vulcan be like, he beat them. They beat. So it's like,
yes,
Stanford beat Cal 13-7. He looks so confused, but it's like so clearly Forrest trying to rib Archer over like a water polo score.
Yeah.
Which again, I must go a little bit insane. That the closest thing we have to a Star Trek canon, which is all goofed up and fucked, but this is right after First Contact, which, like, in First Contact, the United States of America is reeling from nuclear fallout, and we still have NCAA water polo.
Yes, that is critically important. The colleges are still playing water polo.
UCLA, or Cal, Berkeley, and Stanford both survived nuclear winter, and the first thing back is like, we don't have like a president anymore.
No, we're farms.
And the first thing back is like, well, we probably need what's really important to society functioning. Collegiate water polo. Let's make sure we have swimming pools that are just for these guys.
Just
awesome shit.
All right, but the A plot, where slightly cooler stuff happens. They get the guy.
They find him pretty quickly.
They've captured him. He's got a mustache. I also wanted to note that I think is entertaining.
Yeah, because
So the little like plot point here is that they want to like leave immediately, but they're de-icing the deck at this bar, and they de-ice it with acid. So you know you can't go out there yet. You can't leave. So they're like, okay, we got to sit in this bar with this guy. He's got handcuffs on. And he's all like, starts talking. And he's like, the Vulcans just wanted me to come back to rehabilitate me. Because they wanted to, you know, he's implying it's like they wanted to brainwash me. I had seen what was actually going on. And yeah, I worked with smugglers because I had to. That was my job. I was pretending to be a criminal. But I'm not a thief.
No.
I'm actually a good guy. And they just want to kill me and get rid of me.
Right.
Look at my family.
Yeah, like I have a family. I'm just transporting canisters of warp injectors or whatever, which is giving me radiation is going to kill me, by the way.
Yeah. His little family hologram of just like his little nuclear family with two children and a like blonde haired wife. And they're just like smiling happily. I don't know why it was so funny to me.
I thought it was, I don't know. Yeah, it was funny. It was also just like, yeah, he clearly got too deep into it. He got a family while he was undercover. And now he wants to stay with his family. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Walk away, T'Pol.
And Archer's like, don't listen to his lies.
Yeah, it's like your government told you to capture him and you shouldn't listen to him.
You should listen to your government. But yeah, he's like, they want me to the dead just to wrap up loose ends. This is not actually about me doing something bad.
Yeah.
And she is getting so, she's having a hard time believing him that she runs out onto the deck that is covered in acid to go check what's actually on his ship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's spent injector casings.
It's tons of them. Has she had a vision yet at this point?
I wrote down, I don't know if this is when they start, but this is definitely what we wrote back. She starts having flashbacks to Jocelyn. Jocelyn. She's like yelling, or someone's yelling, Jocelyn.
And she's in like the jungle. She's in the jungle.
She's in the jungle and it's yellow.
She's in Nam.
And I wrote down here, press X to Jocelyn. I don't know if you've ever played the video game Heavy Rain.
No.
But there's a point in it where you yell Josh by pressing an X button in a mall to find your kid.
Okay.
And there's an error where he just keeps yelling, Josh. because this is just a scene where just you're Jocelyn, Jocelyn, over and over. But yeah, she's clearly having a time with this. Something happened. Something that she doesn't remember. So she goes back to talk to him more, but this time alone, without Archer there.
Mm-hmm.
And also Travis. Also Travis. No, you can't be here either. Because he is there. So she asks about Jocelyn. And this is where it then becomes very clear that she had memories that were repressed. And specifically the memory she had repressed was that she killed Jocelyn.
Jocelyn is dead at her by her hand.
By her hand. But he was also trying to grab a weapon. So like what was going on there?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the special edition of this, of course, they alternate. So Jocelyn shoots first, but longtime fans say that she actually yells McClunkley and shoots him first.
I thought they fixed it in the special re-edition on streaming.
Clayton, I can't tell you.
Okay.
I only watched the very legally downloaded despecialized edition I have.
I still have it on VHS, so I can see the original anytime.
I have you know what? I realize I had the old VHS, like I had the VHS of the special edition. Damn. Well, it's gone. You know, my parents recently moved out of my childhood home, and all my VHSs are gone.
Star Trek Enterprise.
Of my.
So, this is all a lot for her to hear, and he's very intent that like you don't remember it. How you killed Jocelyn. And this seems to have taken a lot out of her physically to like go through this experience, like remembering this.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to Archer and explains the Fulara.
The Fulara. I thought they were saying the Ferrara.
The Ferrara.
Yeah. Like,
now, I didn't check
they
this.
They went to Jesse Ferrara's house and they were getting...
the Ferrara Rocher.
I was driving a Ferrari and I...
I don't remember. Is this something they've ever talked about in Star Trek?
The Fulara?
Is it new?
I don't know. She's like, it's an obsolete Vulcan ritual. I'm looking at the memory alpha, which I feel like is pretty reliable for this sort of thing, finding mentions of stuff. And it says it is only mentioned in this episode.
It is a temple town in Labpur CD block in Bulpur subdivision of Birbhum district in West Bengal in India.
Okay. So.
Oh, memory alpha. Okay. There we go. Yeah, it's
memory alpha.
The tiniest entry. Wow. Okay.
It's like a 3-sentence entry on memory alpha. It's the obsolete Vulcan ritual, which repressed a memory and emotions associated with that memory. It is the Eternal Sunshine procedure. She Eternal Sunshine herself. She still is like, and much like Eternal Sunshine, still is the flashes of the memory.
But apparently it makes you forget also that you went and did the Fulara. So she didn't even remember that she did this until
and
now.
They do that, and they do that in Eternal Sunshine also.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Nope. Yeah. No, you get. Yeah. All your friends get mailed a little card.
So she then goes to talk to Archer about this. And Pajim mentioned.
Pajim mentioned. waving my little Shran flag.
Yes,
Pajim
exactly.
Mentioned.
She went to Pajim. Pajim. For Vulcan PTSD, basically, because boy, did she have a rough time after killing Jocelyn on this mission, and also letting Minos get away.
But he reached. They both reached for the gun.
They both reaching for guns.
The gun. The gun. The gun. The gun.
And you know, she went to Pajim for like treatment.
Chicago? No, nothing.
No, sorry.
Fine. You know what? No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
Sorry.
It's fine. It's fine.
It was good.
Not
it was
bad.
Good, Maddie.
It was good. Thank you. Moving on.
I want to give you credit. So she was there for therapy, and they were trying really hard to get her, you know, over her guilt. It was just racked with guilt for killing someone. Yeah. Because, you know, that's how CIA feel when they kill people.
It's a Vulcan shoot and cry, yeah. baby.
And yeah. they just couldn't make her feel better with the you know, typical techniques and treatments. So she did this. Right. She did the Fulara. And it worked. She did it. It apparently yeah. worked really well. She didn't think about this at all mm-hmm. until literally when they, like, gave her the mission again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it all started coming back. And
she was triggered.
It triggered a relapse, and before she can say much else about this and how she's feeling, the door opens behind them, and the bar is now on fire.
And I was watching this one, as I often do while I'm drawing, and I went reround and rewatched this sequence like 5 times. Because I was like, surely I missed something.
Yeah. How did this?
Because the bar's on fire and they run inside and Travis is there and he just goes, he kicked over the table. And I'm like, exactly. Does that explain why the bar's on fire?
And it exploded? Like, I was like, I watched it once to get like, and he knocked over a lantern and alcohol. Like, no, he just says that. And then apparently
he just says he kicked over the table.
A cascade of things, I suppose. That leads to fire.
He went to the other side of town and he rolled a marble down a ramp and then he ran away. And then 20 minutes later, his bar's on fire.
And, you know, in the chaos,
yeah,
he's able to get free.
And he says, and Archer's like, weird thing for a man of peace to do.
Yeah.
And he's like, ironic, isn't it?
Oh, wait.
And he's like, I'd rather die here knowing I'm not guilty than being taken away
for being
guilty.
Because somehow...
For a crime I did not commit.
He caused this entire fire somehow by kicking over the table, but he is still handcuffed to the chair.
Right.
So they're like, oh no, we have to take off his handcuffs, otherwise he'll burn up and die. But then when they unhandcuff him, he like pushes them and then in the chaos gets away.
Maybe it's one of the tables from like Aqua Teen Hunger Force when he kicked it over, it just exploded.
And that's the thing,
the way that everything on the show explodes when they throw it.
Exactly. Yeah. Or I feel like there's some Simpsons joke that's also like that. That's some thing that should not explode.
Yeah.
It's great. I wish they would have just done that.
Or the thing from Wet Hot American Summer, every time someone throws something, you hear a pot shattering on screen.
Yes. They had to, you know, this is a long episode. They had to save time. It's on fire.
Yeah,
they chase him, or they try to like chase him and he's completely gone. So they go looking for him on his ship, which, you know, that's smart.
Mm-hmm. Perfect place to look for a guy trying to get away.
And he's not there according to scanners. They're looking around. I'm going to say, I thought the thing here was that like, okay, they all run to his ship and he runs to their ship and takes it and leaves. I thought that's what had happened.
Right. I thought a lot of other things were going to happen at the end of this episode.
Because I did not remember any of this episode. Not a lick.
Yeah, I also did not remember it, weirdly.
And
it's like, oh, you know what? I'm just remembering, actually. I'm getting flashes. Clayton, you and me, the first time we watched this episode, like when we were doing our original watches of the show years ago, we both did the Fulara. And we forgot that we had to eliminate the most boring episodes of the show.
We
both had forgotten. And now I'm remembering you and me running through the jungle with a remote control in our hands. We're both reaching for it.
And I muted it.
And you turned it off. Okay.
Yeah. I thought I just muted it, but it turned it. I turned it off. Yeah. So
it's just a show. It was innocent.
They're looking around. He's not here. It doesn't make sense.
He's gone.
And Archer's like, Travis, go get the ship warmed up. Let's get out of here. I guess he's got to come here eventually. And Travis goes in there to Paul, and Archer keep looking around. Travis is like, Captain, there's something in here you got to take a look at. Archer leaves to Paul alone in the cockpit. Travis points out a very weird power supply thing, circuit. I don't know.
There is
a big button in a hidden compartment. And Archer's like, huh, I wonder what that is. Let's turn it off. And I'm thinking, like, again, I read a lot of sci-fi. It's like, what if that's like the containment for something? Like, or again, he has tricked you, thinks you'll come in here and be like, ooh, big button. And then you'll blow up the ship. I don't know. It's just like,
right.
For some reason, this seems like the dumbest idea to just press a random button with a lot of, all they know about it is that it's a very high energy thing.
Yeah. It opens, yeah.
And they,
it
they,
opens the hatch, and his family's in there, and like, oh no, a family.
Yeah, well,
fine, whatever, something.
But they press it, they depower whatever this is, and then in the other room with T'Pol, a cloaking wall deactivates, and oh, there's Minos. You know, that's it. You know, he's a smuggler. He has a hidden wall, I guess, with a big obvious button in his cockpit. I don't know how secret it is, but so he almost captures them. By aiming a gun at T'Pol. It's a bigger gun. I don't know why, like, he just says, you know, drop it, but
fine.
She does. And then Archer and Travis come in, and they're like, hey, T'Pol, we pressed a button. And they're like, oh, that's why. Okay. So he's like, you know, drop your weapons, go in that locker over there, and I'll just take T'Pol. I won't hurt you. So they do. They put their guns down, and they open this door right next to the guns and go inside. And then he's like, T'Pol, go over there and lock it. She's standing in front of the door, pressing the buttons to lock it. And they pull the old opening the door trick.
You never expect them to try the old opening the door trick.
Yeah, and that turns the tables. It hits T'Pol. She falls. Archer grabs the guns and starts shooting. But you know what? They didn't expect him to pull the old trap door trick. And he escapes again.
There he goes.
This is some like listless action where they're just like, we need you to shoot for a couple seconds. How do we get to that? I don't know. I open the door. Like,
yeah,
it's not because we've seen them like do. It's probably the most consistently weak thing they do, which is there's just never good action on this show. They don't think it through it. They have limited resources.
It's never direct. There's like every so often I remember there was an episode a while ago. We were both like, wow, what a great action sequence. Yes. I think someone directed it that was real.
Yeah.
It was maybe it was an episode that Jordy, what's his name? God, what's his real name? My brain is fried from this episode. Yeah. What's his name? Clayton. Jesus fucking Christ.
LeVar Burton.
I think it was an episode he directed or an episode Frakes directed that had like good action.
Yes. Yeah. And like just like blocking and what leads to X,
yeah.
Y.
And you were both astonished by it. Yes.
It was amazing. And it was like a 30-second scene. But this one is just, you know, nothing like, okay, he's escaped again. He went down a trapdoor. I guess it's a ship. He knows where that is. But they just go downstairs and he's like, you're going to let me walk away. Because I don't know. T'Pol gets down there first and he's like, you're going to let me walk away because you don't think I'm really guilty, do you?
Yeah,
and she's aiming a gun at him as he just starts walking away. And then Archer's just like, don't let him. Don't. Just don't do that. Which is like, wait, this is it? And she's just, because she's literally like, this is where I needed you here because I trust you. What should I do? And he's like, stun him. Like, just do it.
Like, just stun. I got so mad at this juncture of the show. Because I'm just like, it's leaning up to this moment where you're like, she should just maybe let him go, I think. Maybe.
It also feels like instead of saying, trust yourself, trust your instincts.
It's trust your government.
It's trust your government.
Do what your government says to do. Be a good soldier.
I think he said like, your government
your government sent you here to get him, not to make a judgment.
Yes.
Just do it. And she does it. And it's like, my man. Are you telling me to just follow orders?
Basically.
And I sound like the reverse of, you know, there are those dumb shit guys now that like watch Star Trek. I'm like, why is woke in Star Trek? Because they're illiterate and have never watched anything with intention in their life. I feel like the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Like, where's this like, sorry, did you just say like, do the Nuremberg defense parentheses positive complimentary? Like,
yeah.
Are you kidding?
Because we're going to find out here and just right after this is that, oh, he actually did have explosive green goo on his ship.
By the way, he had a bunch of evil goo hidden in his ship.
So, okay.
Here in the evil goo cabinet. And then like, oh, great. Okay. Thank God.
You were right. We should have done this. It's like, okay, you could have done something here where like, this is the, you know, the hunting down the Nazis in Argentina kind of thing where it's like, okay.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you cannot truly run away from your past.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you've done these things, you actually do need to pay for them. I don't care that you as a Nazi are now. It's very funny because I actually just watched an episode of The Americans, which I'm watching right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great show. If you watch The Americans. But there's an episode in the fifth season where they go and are sent to go track down a Nazi collaborator living in Boston. And spoilers for the Americans, a show that came out 10 years ago, but they end up executing this old Nazi and her husband, who's like an American guy that she's married, had no idea that he was married to a Nazi collaborator who, like, she tells a whole sob story about how she was a teenager and, like, was forced to do it basically and didn't have any other choice. And they still kill her. And it is on the show, on that show, more like, well, Elizabeth Jennings is like a little too into it. And her husband, Philip, is not so much into this anymore. He's not really feeling being a spy so much. And it's like, maybe not good that she just like executed this lady, but it is sort of like but in her reasoning is like, well, I don't care that you volunteer at the United Way now or whatever. You are still a Nazi and you killed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
You killed a bunch of like soldier, like communist, like people, like boys in the Red Army who are like fighting against fascism. Like, sorry, like you have to die. You can't run away from that. And there's like, there's an interesting thing to talk about with that stuff, but just to be like straightforwardly, like, no, he wasn't good at all. He was simply lying. He's still doing the bad thing.
Yeah.
And you just have to, when your government says a guy is bad, you should just deliver him to your government.
Mm-hmm.
No questions asked.
Yeah.
Is, I would say, deficient morally as a message.
Yeah, she literally doesn't.
To be kind.
Yeah. Literally can't trust her memories right now. It seems like.
Yeah.
The way this episode is gearing it towards is the, you should question your government. We've even had, like, you know, some of the more interesting things here is maybe the Vulcans aren't as good as they are all cracked up to be. Like,
but Jem.
And this would have been interesting.
Jem.
So
Jem mentioned.
But no, it's just completely okay. After this, Archer and T'Pol have basically one more little conversation where it's just about trust. Again, knocking the audience over the head with this. Archer says something about how humans, they, you know, they don't repress their memories and try to forget them. They learn to deal with them and move on. And she, and, you know, just kind of like, if you ever need someone you can trust, that, you know, me, I would be the one. Trust me.
All humans are good at dealing with trauma.
Of course. That's our superpower.
Everyone at Starfleet Academy has been taught CBT.
God.
Or, yeah. Archer's like, if you're having a bad time, T'Pol, just name five things you can see, four things you can hear, etc. Oh, man.
Anyways, God, they go through the Americans, the training before they can become deep cover agents.
Yeah. They basically make them Vulcans. I mean, honestly.
Good show. Good show. Watch that one.
Fucking great show. Go watch listen to this podcast, but watch The Americans instead. A great show that weirdly takes the stance that, like, no state is good, and like the project of a state with borders is like a bloody, horrible, violent, evil affair. And it's crazy that the show was written by like an ex-CIA guy who is currently like a Zionist maniac. And I'm like, how'd you get there? How'd you write the good show?
It's
very bizarre.
The whole thing about like the South Africa plot line is fascinating to me.
It's crazy. And now that guy was one of the signatories to that letter when Jonathan Glazer did his Oscar speech.
I'm glad that show
like very, very, very briefly mentioned the genocide in Gaza when he was accepting an Oscar for Zone of Interest, and he got like a bunch of Jewish TV writers and movie writers like sent him an angry, like, finger wagging letter, and it was like, what? Anyways.
Well, that show wrapped up at least, so.
Yeah, that show's at least been long over.
But we have many more episodes of Star Trek Enterprise to go, so we appreciate you being here.
Many episodes before we sleep.
Yeah, time dilation break, but we'll, you know, hit things regularly again. And I think you can look out for sometime in the future, a Femme Fatale bonus if you're a subscriber to our Patreon.
$1 a month.
Because we're on the cadence back to a good movie. So I think we deserve
it. Yeah, I think we should.
We give ourselves a little treat.
Yeah. I'm looking at what's next week's Star Trek episode? Another one I don't remember. I've done the Florida this whole season, I think. Really petering out on this one.
This has been
thank you for listening.
Thank you. It's
I have been your science officer, Matt.
And I've been your captain, Clayton Ashley.
As always.
Always.
As always. Let's go.
Let's go.